Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Well, good morning to you. It's Friday. It's 9:08. I'm Andy, and you know what? I was fighting it earlier. I'm just going to let it go and throw it out there. It is my birthday. Thank you for the acknowledgement of my birthday on this March the 1st. I'm 58, in case you're wondering. I told Mel, I said, I'm 29 times two. She's like, I still don't know how old that is. But yeah, 58 years old. And I got a cool text from my dad a few minutes ago. First time my dad ever saw me as a newborn child. He had been teaching a class over at UNLV. I was born in Las Vegas. Went over to the hospital after I'd been born, and the first time he saw me, they had, I don't know if they still do this anymore, but they were trying to get my footprint. They had me in the little room where you could do the footprints, and I was this big barrel-chested baby, and I was kicking and screaming, and I guess I got ink all over the doctor and the floor and the countertop and the nurse, and so, yeah, that was the first time my dad ever met me. I was getting ink everywhere, so that was pretty cool.
That's about right.
Yeah. I still do spill some ink and now and then. But by the way, that voice you heard just now, that's Melody Finlinson.
Melody
is our call screener / producer / makes the show better looking. although it's not hard to do since I'm the host. But anyway.
Well, thanks for that.
10 minutes after 9 o'clock this morning. I do want to do a little reflection on birthday time. And by the way, later on in the program, probably in about 20 minutes or so, Celeste Malloy will join us for a few minutes to talk about her first bill ever passing in Congress, as well as she is now no longer the juniorest junior congressperson. There is someone newer than her. So there's that. Go on.
Exactly, yes.
Everything going okay your way, Melanie? Selling houses this week?
Not this week, no. Okay, no. But showing houses, yes.
Very, very cool. Now that Parade of Homes is done, how much of a boon was that to realtors? Did it accelerate the number of people?
I think it gets people kind of like in that buying frenzy, like mm-hmm. looking like, I think I would like this in my house, so maybe let's look for a house that has that.
We were talking with Stockton a little earlier about the month of March and how he loves March. I love March. Obviously, my birthday's in March. But more than that, it is, you know, it's kind of the symbol of a new beginning. You've got the springtime and the nicer weather. And honestly, with realtors, this is kind of the time of year where things start to ramp up a little bit, right?
Yes, yes. It gets a little busier around this time of year, and the weather's really lovely. And so it's nice to be out showing houses and checking out people and talking to people.
March, April, May, and even June a little bit in St. George. And then things kind of slow down in July and August. I wonder why.
I don't know. Maybe people are swimming instead of being in the heat.
Might be a little bit hot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, all right, let's talk about 58th birthday today. Let's talk about some birthday. I found this website. It said birthday self-reflection questions. And I read through them. This is off the cuff. This is real, fresh, honest answers. And we're going to help Mello play this a little, too. And the reason I bring this up, not because I want to focus on my birthday, but because I think we all need to slow down, sit back a little, and start thinking about some of the things that are important in life. Good friend of mine is a hospice chaplain. And his job basically is to comfort those that are dying and their families. And it's a very, very sobering job. It's weird. I had a friend that did that. He retired from that. And then I had another friend that took his place. But that's a tough job and a job I could not do. You know, imagine all the sadness and everything. But he said, one of the things he told me was, he said, never once have I had a dying patient say, oh, I wish I'd have bought that car, or I wish I had had a bigger house, mm-hmm. or I wish I had more money, or that it's always, man, I wish I had had a better relationship with my son or daughter or spouse or uncle or cousin or whatever. I wish I had spent more time with them instead of, you know, chasing the almighty dollar. And
mm-hmm.
pretty sobering, you know.
Yeah.
But something we all need to think about when everything else is stripped away from you. You know, even the richest die. I mean, you think about, you know, somebody like what's his name, the Apple guy, Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs, yeah.
He got pancreatic cancer, and he was one of the richest men on the planet, and everything was stripped away, and he was the same way. He's like, yeah, I created a great company. I'm proud of Apple, but man, I wish I had been a little better at developing the relationships in my life. So,
yeah, that's something you can't go back and change. So got to hang on to those moments while you have them.
Okay. Question number one, how do you feel about, well, it says this birthday, or how do you feel about your life at this very moment? That is a question that cuts deep and digs down in there. How do I feel about life right now? I feel incredibly grateful to have an amazing spouse. And by the way, my wife made the trip across town. She works over in Washington City, made the trip across town and brought me some treats. It's funny, I'm 58. We've been married 35 plus years. But when I have a little monitor that shows me a picture of the front door. When I saw her on this monitor, my heart just a little skip, you know.
Really?
You know,
yeah. That's so tender. I love that.
Yeah. So you know, as far as relationships in my life, I feel actually really good about the relationships in my life. There are some physical things I would like to fix. I have this, I don't know if I've talked about it much on the show, but I have this problem with my lower left leg. I cannot feel from the knee down on my left leg. I can't feel anything. You could stab me in the calf on my left side, I wouldn't feel it. I don't know why it happened. I've been to somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 different doctors, from, you know, orthopedists to neurologists to, I've had back surgery. Nobody can fix it, and we don't know why it's doing that. But I would like that fixed. That led to some other issues. I burned my foot, gained weight that I didn't want, unwanted weight. And, you know, so there are some physical things I'd like to fix. But as far as interpersonal relationships, I feel pretty good about them. I have a great relationship with Mello, who comes in here every Friday and hangs out with me. Mello, how about you? How are you sitting on your, if you reflect back, how are you feeling about your life right now?
I think that I'm on a really good trajectory right now. Mm-hmm. I feel like I am introspective and I am focusing on things that make me feel good and making sure that the way I'm interacting with other people is making them feel good. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I've come a long way, like just looking back, like the way I was as a mom 20 years ago. Not everybody gets to repeat being a mom like every 5 or 6 years, like by having another baby like I did.
Yeah.
So like looking at how I'm parenting this child versus like the irritation that I had like 20 years ago, like how uptight I was, how like, oh no, don't do that. You can't do that. And now I'm like, so these are your options. How would you like to do it? And just kind of like watching him. So I feel like I'm doing a better job in some of those areas.
I mean, am I in trouble if I ask how old you are? Or are you okay?
No, I don't care. I'm 48.
48. Okay. And so you really have had, and you've raised how many kids?
Seven. So my oldest turns 30 next month.
Okay.
And my baby is seven.
So you really have run the gamut through the really almost generations of raising kids and how things have changed quite a bit. I think it's cool that you're able to adapt on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
I know this with my own personal life. My oldest is 32. My youngest is 20. In those 12 years, we definitely changed as parents.
Yes.
And my 32-year-old will tell you that we got a lot softer.
I know, but I think...
Maybe so.
I think it's because you learn which battles to pick.
That's true.
And everything isn't as important in the moment 20 years ago as it is now. Like, it's not the same dynamics. It's just you learn. You have more wisdom, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think. I don't know.
No, I agree. You learn and you start sorting out what's really important. And one of the most poignant moments in my life is, you know, I was a pretty hardcore, strict guy with some things. And I remember having an argument with my, at the time, 17-year-old son. And it was, these are the rules of the house. If you can't keep the rules of the house, you need to leave. I wasn't bluffing, but I never really thought that my 17-year-old son would go, okay, then I'm out. So we had this argument, we had this talk, and then my wife and I went out to dinner. This was a Friday afternoon, Friday evening, and when we came home, he had written a one-page letter about how he couldn't keep those rules, and he was leaving, and he did leave, and he was not there when we got back.
Wow.
And as a parent, you know, there were some lessons I learned there. You know, stick to your guns. That's a good lesson. But also, if you're going to stick to your guns and have hardcore rules, it's going to hurt.
Yeah. And yeah. You've got to decide what's more important. Would you rather have had him back or let those rules stay? Like, that's the kind of question you have to ask yourself.
Yeah. And you know, I've had different reaction from different parents. I've had some parents saying, oh, you screwed up. You totally did the wrong thing. And I've had other people say, way to stick to your guns. Good job. And you know, to this day, I'm still like, I don't know if I did the right thing. I have a good relationship with his son now, but he did not. He had to learn, unfortunately, the hard way. Some of the rules, some of the things he was doing were not good. And he had to learn the hard way that they were not good. So.
I don't know. I think it's probably good for both of you. Like, you had to learn how to stand up for yourself. But then on his side, he had to learn how to stand up for himself, too. So I don't think it was bad necessarily for either of you guys. You guys both grew through the situation.
All right. Couple more questions about aging and self-reflection. What has surprised you the most over the past 12 months? I read this earlier, and I was stumped. I was like, surprise me, surprise. I don't know. Maybe if you have one, Mello, I need some help on this one because I can't, I try not to be surprised.
Well, it surprised me how quickly I could lose weight and then how quickly I could gain it back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm with you on that one. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. It seems like, well, actually, it surprised me how hard it can be to lose weight, although you had a good system and lost a lot of weight, and then how easy it is to gain weight.
I know. You just look at the food, and then you can gain a pound or two. It's seriously. So easy.
What's that smell? Oh, you just gained 5 pounds.
I know. Good job.
What has surprised me the most over the past 12 months? I really don't have an answer for that.
I don't know. I think it's surprising how your attitude can affect so many outcomes for yourself. Hmm. Like, if you have a more positive outlook, I really do think better things come to you. And then when you have a negative outlook, it's kind of like Murphy's Law. If something can go wrong, it will go wrong. But maybe that's because you're looking for something to go wrong.
Hmm. Good call on that one. What has impressed me the most in the past 12 months? I don't know if this is number one, but certainly on the list would be the resilience of my son. And I don't want to get into everything that's happened to him, but there have been some major life events that have happened to him that were beyond his control. And the way that he has bounced back and fought hard and moved forward with his life when it would have been easy to kind of sit down and cry and feel sorry for yourself. I hope that part of his, you know, his ability to be resilient and fight, I taught him, but I think more of it is really just, you know, God given. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that's really impressed me. What about you?
Impressed me?
Yeah.
Well, I'm really impressed that I'm going to have another grandbaby this year. That's impressive.
Yeah. How many do you have?
This will be number three.
Number three. Okay. Yeah. Very cool.
I think grandbabies are the way to go. I think you agree with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sugar him up,
mm-hmm.
and give him back. Poopy diaper? Nope, that's you, not me, son.
Oh, I'll still do those. I don't care. I think I haven't been out of practice long enough. I'll still do that.
Okay, what have the past 12 months taught you? And I don't know what the answer to that. I think part of the thing that I'm learning is that with the political process, I've always felt like having this radio show has been a bit important part of the political process, and it is, but I think it's maybe not enough, and I'm planning on going to Tuesday's caucuses, and I'm planning on reaching out. I think integrity is another thing that it's been reaffirmed, that to stick by your guns and try to do what's right no matter what people say. There is, you know, I hate to keep bringing this up, there is another radio host in town who I don't think has a lot of integrity. And she, whichever way the wind blows, she blows that way too. And I'm never going to be like that. I, mm-hmm. you know, I have the things that I believe and know are right, and I'm just going to stay with them. So,
no, I like that about you.
All right. What about you? What have you learned? What have you been taught in the last year?
I've been taught that if I decide I want to do something, I can do it.
Nice.
I can put my mind to something and I can do it. I wanted to get into broadcasting.
I was going to say, yeah. let me stop you and tell
you
a little story about Mello.
Okay.
Mello came in to record a commercial for a local company, and I'd never met her before. And she came in with one of the people at work here, and Mello said, you know, I'd really like to, you know, get into broadcasting. This is something I was interested in when I was younger. I really like to get into it. And I was like, well, you know, here's the thing. We don't have any money and we don't, you know. And she's like, oh, I'll work for free. I want to get my foot in the door and prove how valuable I can be. And Mello, you have done that. You have proven, and now you're on payroll. It's not a lot of money, but you're getting some money for. It's not like selling a $1.4 million house, but it's, you know, you are here. You're a professional. You've done live remote broadcasts all by yourself. I find you a very valuable part of the team, Andy Griffin.
Thank you.
I love having you here. And in fact, if I was the man, well, and I don't want to burn my boss, but if I was the one in control, you would be with me every single day.
Thank you. That's super sweet. No, I think that people don't give themselves enough credit, and that if you really do want something, you just need to take those steps and move forward, and then everything will come together to help you get there. It's my opinion.
Here's a great question on the list. One that is a hard one to answer, because in answering this one, you have to admit there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. The question is, what are you ready to let go of this year?
Oh, I know.
You know?
Yeah. I've been doing it. I started January 1st. I am on a mission to minimize and declutter my whole house.
Clutter. You're ready to let go of clutter.
I'm ready to just, I want less things that I have to wash, that I have to take care of, that I have to dust around, that I have to move. I want less things so I can have more time. And I've actually been doing that every day since January 1st. I'm on day 61 today.
And you do something unique too, right? You actually have, like, do you do videos or posts on? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I have video posts that I post on Instagram, and I have 13,000 followers today.
No,
I started out with 256 followers, and I've just been posting every day of decluttering one thing. If it's a drawer, if it's a shelf, if it's a closet.
Well, aren't you running out of things to declutter?
Oh,
or?
Oh my gosh, I have so much. I haven't parked in my garage in over a year and a half.
Oh.
I have. And I did the house. I'm done with most of the things in the house, and now I've moved on to the garage. So buckle up, buttercup, because it's going to be a bumpy ride.
I found that to be quite a common thing, that people don't park in their garages because they have too much stuff in there. Now, I've always been of the opinion, especially when you have weather involved, and you know, whether it's ice in the wintertime, and you know, you have to scrape your windows, and I lived in Logan for 5 years, that you got to have a garage for your car. And so we have three cars, and they are in the garage every single day. So.
Well, I have three cars, but I have a lot of stuff, and I don't need the stuff. I want my cars in the garage. So that is the goal. And I also have a gym in the first car garage, but it's so cluttered with stuff, I can't use the gym.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah. So anyway, it's working, and just doing one thing a day is making such a difference. It's amazing. I make my bed every day now. Like, there's very so many cool different things that happen because of that one thing.
Letting go of clutter. I like that. I think, for me personally, let go one thing. I don't know if I'm ready to let go of this, but soon I will let go of my soda pop addiction. I don't know if that's an addiction, but it's something that I really enjoy. That's the hard thing about it. It's not, and I guess a cigarette smoker or somebody, you know, who's addicted to drugs to say, well, I'm not addicted, I just enjoy it.
Oh.
But for me, I just feel like it makes me feel good. I'm happier when I have a soda pop, a Dr. Pepper to drink during the show.
But it's hard. I gave up soda last year for like 6 months, and I felt a lot better, but it was hard. And then if I had one drink, I can't just have one. Like, I'm like an alcoholic.
Really?
I can't. If I have one, then I'm back on the wagon. With soda. I don't drink alcohol, for the record.
Right.
I've never had alcohol.
My son told me a story, and involves you. last night he came over, and he said that he went to a local establishment here and ordered a dirty Dr. Pepper. Now, unbeknownst to him, he has never, ever in his life had an alcoholic drink. Unbeknownst to him, a dirty Dr. Pepper in places that serve alcohol involves, I don't know if it's whiskey or rum.
Rum. It's rum.
What, is it rum? Uh-huh. And so apparently he drank this. Or I don't know if he drank all of it, but he drank some of it.
On more than one occasion, I will add.
Oh, he did. He didn't tell me that.
He didn't know that it was included that.
I don't know this, but I would think if there was alcohol in a drink that I was drinking, that I would know this.
But how would you know if you've never had it?
Well, it has a burn. It has a kick.
Not if it's covered in sugar. I guess. I don't know. I haven't had the dirty Dr. Pepper there.
But apparently you went to this same establishment a week or two afterwards and ordered the same thing.
No,
and
I was going to order the same
thing. Right, but they're like, you're going to drink alcohol? And they're like, and you were like, it has alcohol? And you didn't.
You didn't
have it.
No, I didn't order it.
So kudos to you, to my son. Like, don't, you know.
He didn't know. That's so funny. But it could have been me.
Yeah.
It could have been me. I could have had my first alcoholic beverage there, and I didn't know.
But shouldn't they have, shouldn't they have known that he didn't drink?
And, well, maybe and he said didn't look to him? Old enough to card.
He's 32.
Tell him that.
He's losing his hair. He's 32 and he's losing his hair. Come on now. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it's a funny story. He says he's actually kind of embarrassed that he drank that without knowing it, and he's never going to do it again.
But, so funny. I would have done the same thing, though. I never would have known. So yeah. There's no judgment here. It's just
those
funny.
Those of you out there listening that drink alcohol, is it possible, in your opinion, and you can text me at 467-5842, is it possible to drink an alcoholic drink without any knowledge that there's alcohol in it? I mean... I find that hard to believe. I remember in college, my friend, we were sitting in the student section at the University of Utah football game, and they were passing around mint schnapps hot chocolate. Mm. And I took one taste, and I knew immediately there was alcohol in this. I could tell right away. Even though it was hot and it was minty, I knew there was alcohol. So for me, I find it hard to believe that you can drink an alcoholic drink and not know it. But maybe I'm way wrong. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe we'll have to go try that dirty Dr. Pepper and you can tell us.
Could be. All right, let's check the text line real quick. Again, we do have Celeste coming up in a minute. Rob says, dirty Dr. Pepper drink has coconut rum and you really can't taste the alcohol in it.
Oh, thank you for that. See, because they do put coconut flavor in the dirty Dr. Peppers.
Scotty says, yes, you can drink an alcoholic drink without knowing about it. By the way, talking about your declutter Instagram thing, they were hoping you could give your Instagram account name.
Sure. It's at Hey, H-E-Y, Organize Me.
Hey, Organize Me.
Mm-hmm. At Hey, Organize Me.
Could you pick a more difficult one, please?
Organize Me. I'm organizing
me. I
know,
but that's like a big long. Couldn't you do Hey, You or something? I guess those are all taken.
It has to have all the words that you're implying.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Hey, Organize Me.
Mm-hmm.
That's it? Okay.
Yeah.
Marianne, of course, a guest here. Actually, next Tuesday she'll be on the show, wishing me a sparkly birthday. Thank you, Marianne. I appreciate that. Another text, happy birthday, Andy. Have a happy day. Thanks for the gift of yourself to all of us. Oh, that is so nice. That is, and I don't even have a prize to give them for being so nice, but we'll have some prizes next week. Right now we need to take a break. I believe we have Celeste coming up here in just a minute. Right now let's check weather.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
All right, welcome back, 933 on KDXU. By the way, the general consensus is that if the drink is sweet enough, you will not taste the alcohol. You won't know it's there. That's kind of the, I don't know, six or seven texts on that. Now, Celeste Malloy is with me on the phone, the congressman representing District 2. Celeste, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Now, I know you don't drink alcohol, Celeste, but my contention was before we went to break that you would be able to taste alcohol on a drink, in a drink, and not drink it unknowingly. My son drank a dirty Dr. Pepper at a local establishment that had coconut rum in it and said he did not know it was alcoholic. I guess we're not really experts, you and I, because we don't drink, but that seems like a stretch to me. I don't know.
I think we might have to go into the local establishment and try one to find out.
Now, you heard it here first. Celeste is a boozer. No, I'm just kidding. I'm joking.
No, I'm just a big Dirty Dr. Pepper fan.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Now, Celeste, congratulations. You passed your first bill as a congressperson. Tell us about it, what your goal was, and just kind of tell us about the whole process.
Okay. Well, I'm on the Small Business Committee. And it was born out of that committee work. So it's a technical fix to the Women-Owned Small Business Program. So it's called the WASB, Women-Owned Small Business. And we have a goal of making sure that 5% of federal contracts go to women-owned small businesses. But in order to qualify for the program, businesses had to prove that they were at least 50% controlled by female shareholders or a president or whatever.
Okay.
But they didn't have to actually prove they were small businesses. So the point of doing this is to get small businesses a chance to compete so that they can be part of this market. And if they're competing against larger businesses, it defeats the purpose. So we just made a technical fix in there so that we know when we're measuring whether we're granting contracts to women-owned small businesses, whether they're actually small businesses. And I had somebody in Southern Utah come talk to me about this and said, I just don't like the idea of the government picking winners and losers. And they're not wrong, but just by awarding government contracts, we're picking winners and losers. And this is a way of trying to spread that out so they're not all going to the same big firms.
Yeah. In interest of fairness, and that sounds like a good idea to me. Celeste, I heard also that you are no longer the junior congressperson now. Is that true?
I'm not.
Well, how did that work?
True. So we had a swearing in this week for Tom Suozzi, who got that seat in New York that was open and in a special election because of George Santos. But he has served, I think, 3 terms in the House. So I think I'm still the newest. I still consider myself the shiniest, newest member of Congress, but we did swear in somebody else. I have a little bit of seniority now.
Well, it's crazy to think that there's an election coming up and you have to fight your way in it again, as considering you just got there. Celeste, we were kind of doing, so today is my 58th birthday, and we were kind of doing, thank you, we were kind of doing a self-reflection thing, and one of the questions that came up was, what have you learned in the last year? And, you know, I had a hard, I don't know, what have I learned? And I talked a lot about, you know, the everyday citizen getting involved. So I always felt like my radio show was really doing the part for the political process. But I've realized now I need, beyond that, I need to make sure that I'm involved in caucus and things like that. But I would then pose the question to you, what have you learned, maybe not in the past year, but just in the past couple of months?
Oh, that is a great question. So the night Tom Suozzi got sworn in was the 3-month mark of my swearing in.
Wow.
And so I did a little reflection that day too. It just sort of, I wore the same suit, even it's the first time I've worn it since then. And I didn't really think it through that morning, but it made me think, you know, it feels like 3 years in a lot of ways, but what have I learned? What has changed since that night I got sworn in? I think one of the biggest things is just how incredible most of the people are who are involved in politics. My colleagues in the House, I don't know a lot of Democrats yet. I mostly know the Republicans, and I've gotten close with a lot of the freshmen. And they're the kind of people that you would just be fascinated to have dinner with. And they believe in this country, and they want Congress to work well. They want the American people to believe in Congress again. And I just think if most people could spend time with them, they'd feel a little better about where we're headed. I mean, everybody sees the current dysfunction, but I think we have a good future with people like that being willing to run.
It seems like to me, and it's this way with every profession, but in particular in politics, there's a couple of bad apples, a couple of bad actors who maybe do something wrong, and we're not going to bring up any names, but people that lie about their qualifications or whatever, that make all the rest of you not look so good. And that's not really fair, is it?
Yeah, well, and there's just also something that happens with a group. You know, individuals who are really smart don't always make good decisions when they're in a group.
Crowd thought.
I think sometimes you don't see how smart some of these individuals are because, you know, you see what we do as a body, and, well, according to the headlines, we're not doing so well.
All right. Tell us a little bit about this whole government funding bill and you know, what's going on with that. And there are a couple of deadlines there. What do you know about it, and where are we at?
So we hit our deadlines with the laddered continuing resolutions, the deadlines that we said we're going to make it so that we could pass bills. We didn't pass bills. So no. We voted yesterday on another 1-week continuing resolution.
Ooh, one week.
Against it. Yeah. But the reason it's only went 1 week is because I think we are ready to vote on spending bills. And so I voted against a continuing resolution because we need to vote on spending bills. It's not just about how much we're spending. It's about how and where we're spending it. And we need to step up and take responsibility and accountability for that. And I think we're going to next week. I don't know that we'll get to the point where we vote on 12 individual appropriations bills. I wish we would.
Yeah.
But I think we'll vote on the appropriations bills that we've been looking at for months now.
Yeah, it'd be nice if we could, you know, actually separate them out and vote on what they're really about instead of trying to throw them all together and make that work. All right, talk about the border a little bit. President Biden and former President Trump down in different cities down on the Mexico border. It's funny. I was talking with our political specialist, Jimmy Kesson, earlier today, and I know you know Jimmy really well, but he said, it's funny how the Democrats are finally starting to go, oh, okay, maybe we shouldn't have a wide open border now that it's an election year. Do you see that in your observance?
No, I actually don't. I'm shocked that in an election year, they're not doing more about the border. Hmm. I mean, yes, the president went to the border. I haven't fact-checked this, but according to the Speaker of the House, he went to the 29th most busy border crossing. So he's not really serious about showing what's going on at the border.
Didn't even go top 10, huh?
Yeah, no, not even top 10. I don't know how many border crossings there are, but 29 has to be near the bottom.
Yeah.
And, you know, administratively, he has a lot of tools he could be using on the border, and he's just not using them. And I would have thought, with this mounting pressure, with Democrat voters starting to say they're fed up with the border, that the administration would be moving, they'd be doing something so they could try to claim some sort of victory in this election year, and they just haven't. And I find that baffling and really troubling. I don't have any interest in getting the president reelected, but I don't think we can go 10 more months with the border the way it is.
Yeah, it's every poll out there now, it's like a growing concern. I read 2 years ago the concern for the border across the board, both Republican and Democrat, was like somewhere in the 30th percentile. Now we're up 45th, 47th percentile. Yeah. Even the Democrats, even a lot of the liberals are going, oh, yeah, maybe this isn't such a good idea. And yet the politicians, I guess, aren't getting it, Celeste.
It appears not. This is the most unifying issue in the country right now, according to polling. You don't have to be a great Democrat strategist to think maybe we should do something about the border if it's the one thing everyone can agree on. And so I don't understand the strategy of continuing to refuse to implement, you know, the parole rule the way it's supposed to be implemented, or going back to the Remain in Mexico policy. I mean, they have options. That wouldn't take any legislation, wouldn't take any new funding, and they're just not exercising those options for reasons that I do not understand.
10, 15, 20 years ago, the concern was letting too many Mexican immigrants into the country without them being vetted. But now it's not just Mexican. In fact, I think it's probably a minority of Mexicans now. It's people from South America, people from Europe, people from Asia, people from Africa. A lot of them are people who are not fans of the United States of America. They're coming here, I think, specifically to make a plan to do harm to us. This is really scary, Celeste.
Yeah, no, it definitely looks like you're right. I mean, it looks like a duck. It walks like a duck. It's probably a duck. And it's not just the people that are coming. I mean, the people that are coming are really concerning. But China has not been shy about the fact that they're deliberately funneling fentanyl into our country across the Mexican border. They're sending people that we don't want here. They're also sending substances that we don't need here that are, you know, killing us, making us sick, making us dumb. And we're going to have to get a lot smarter.
Yeah, we sure are. I don't know how it can be done. And as you mentioned, I mean, yeah, there are some rational voices, but it's almost like voices crying in the wilderness, because once we get to that, that lawmaking process, and it's like, you know, we're not getting the job done, especially with our current executive administration. I don't know. Have you been able to put your finger on anything you specifically can do about this, Celeste?
That is the most frustrating question I get asked right now. As the legislative branch, we only have so many options for getting the executive branch to do something. So we could pass another border bill, but I don't have any reason to believe. Theoretically, we could pass another border bill. I don't know if we could actually get one passed. But if we passed another border bill, there's no reason to believe that this administration would implement it. They're not implementing the tools they have right now at the border. We can cut funding, and I don't think cutting funding at the border is going to solve this problem. And we can exercise our impeachment authority, which we just did. We impeached Secretary Mayorkas, and it didn't change anything. I don't think the Senate's going to take it up. I mean, we're just acting like we're not a serious country and we don't have any real interest in protecting our border. And so as far as what I can personally do, I mean, I voted to impeach. I wasn't there yet when the House voted for H.R. 2. But if the Senate would take that up and make it serious, that's something I would support. I don't know what else to do short of heading to the border, you know, with a flak jacket and a gun and trying to secure it. And that's probably not the best use of my time.
No, probably not. No. And that would be scary. You did go down to the border, though, didn't you?
I did. I went early in January. I'm actually planning to go back on a quieter trip when there are fewer people there. And we don't. The problem we had in January is that the cartels found out we were coming and they cleaned up.
Oh, of course.
Where we were. And so I want to go when nobody knows I'm going and just walk around and talk to law enforcement and locals and find out what they're actually seeing when they don't know they're performing for, you know, a bunch of members of Congress.
Hey, we have someone that wants to talk about the border for a minute. Are you okay with taking a caller real quick?
Sure.
All right. Doug is on line two. Doug, you're on with Andy and with Celeste. What's up?
Yes. Hi, Andy and Celeste. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Excellent. Excellent. And Celeste, it's just why would the Democrat leadership keep allowing all the illegal immigration to come through? I think it's just simple. It's the power they want to keep, and it's just votes. They know they let them come through, and it's just that they assume that's just more votes for them. I think, plain and simply, I would think that would be the reason.
I mean, you must be right. That's the only argument I've heard that makes any sense. But I do have a couple of really good friends who represent border districts who've told me that they're miscalculating most of these people who are coming across the border. Now, someone who's a Chinese operative and coming across the border, maybe not so much. But the people who are coming from Central and South America, you know, they have family values. They want less government. They've seen what some of these capital L liberal ideas do. And so hopefully they're miscalculating here and the votes won't go the way they think they're going to go.
Yeah, hopefully. All right, 947 on KDXU. How long do you have, Celeste? Do we need to let you go, or are you able to stick around a little longer?
I can stick around a little bit longer.
Okay, I'm going to do a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back with Celeste some more and some questions, and we'll just talk about her experience in Washington, D.C. Be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back. Celeste Malloy is on the phone with me this morning. Hi, Celeste. You doing all right?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Washington, D.C., have you found a good place to eat in D.C. yet? I know you've been out there a couple of years, but good place?
I don't get to places to eat very often. I mostly eat a few bites here and there on the run.
So the glamorous,
I really love the steakhouses. That's the thing. Glamorous, when you come to Washington, D.C.
The glamorous life of a congresswoman is not really that glamorous, is what you're saying.
No, it's much less glamorous than it looks, much less powerful than it looks, but I'm still really grateful to be doing it.
Well, we're glad you're out there fighting for us. Your specialty, obviously, on the lands and agriculture side of things, there's probably a learning curve in some of the other things like foreign policy and stuff. Do you feel like as you're learning this stuff that you look at Chris Stewart and what he was able to do, given his specialties. I know you were able to learn at his feet. Are these the kind of things that you're really getting kind of on-the-job training?
Yeah, this is one of the reasons it's really important to be a decent human being who can get along with other people because I have a lot of really cool colleagues now who have different areas of expertise than me, and I can learn from them, and I can teach them about things like public land that, you know, my friends east of the Mississippi don't even understand this concept.
Yeah.
And then I've made friends with a lot of the, you know, special forces guys, the former Navy SEALs, and they're willing to sit and talk to me about military policy and foreign policy and their experiences. And that's one of the coolest parts of the job.
How many people would you say in your experience learning this stuff are out there in this world of ours that absolutely 100% want America to fail? And in fact, not only want America to fail, but are willing to do something to help America fail? Because it seems like there's a lot of people out there like that.
Yeah, I have heard that there are. I haven't run into anybody like that. Now, keep in mind, I still mostly only know the Republicans. And some of the people that I hear want America to fail are on the other side of the aisle. But what I see with my colleagues on my side of the aisle is people who desperately want to see America succeed and are trying to figure out what we need to adjust to be able to stay on track and keep the, you know, the foundations of our republic in place.
Have you had the opportunity, Celeste, to actually kind of take center stage and be the person that everyone in Congress, everyone in the House of Representatives is listening to? Because that seems pretty scary.
Well, probably the biggest experience I had like that was when I got sworn in and the whole Congress was sitting there on the House floor listening to me.
Wow.
But I've taken the gavel as the Speaker pro tem and managed the floor.
Wow.
And I've gone and spoken in defense of my bill. So I've had opportunities like that, but the really meaningful ones are when you're sitting with 1 to 10 of your colleagues and talking passionately about the things that really matter in your district and explaining to them, you know, why people in Utah's 2nd Congressional District really need help on these bureaucratic agencies that are managing all of our land and creating roadblocks for our local governments. When you can have those kind of small group conversations about that, you really change hearts and minds. And that's what it's going to take to go back to some of the basics of what Congress should be doing.
One of your areas of expertise, obviously, is lands. And it's crazy to think how much land in southern Utah is owned by the federal government. And then it's also maybe even crazier to think when you think about some of the environmental groups out there that will block, you know, we try to do a land swap to put a road in or something, and you've got, you know, NEPA, and you've got all these agencies and groups that are, they're not letting it happen. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and it's so easy for some of these groups to do messaging. They use such noble words and phrases to make it sound like they're saving all of us. You know, we're going to stop this road from going through a tortoise habitat. And they make it sound like we're in a battle, you know, between good and evil. And it's tougher to be the nerdy but honest person who says, yes, this road's going through tortoise habitat, and it can be built in a way that's really porous where tortoises can go back and forth. And it can be mitigated so the tortoises actually thrive and we get our road and we need both things. It takes longer to explain that than to just use some high-minded talking points like we're saving tortoises for future generations. And so that's why those conversations matter. That's why sitting with your colleagues and explaining what it is you're trying to do and why it matters so much in your district is really important.
One of our good friends, both of you and I are good friends with Zach Renstrom, the Washington County Water Conservancy District, and he tells me of some of the issues that some of these environmental groups have, like a certain bacteria, you know, that's that particular bacteria's, or phytoplankton or whatever, that's their natural habitat, and so we can't do that there. Or, you know, the Lake Powell pipeline, which right now is on indefinite hold while they deal with all the, I think he was saying it was like a 60,000-page report, environmental report. It just is crazy to me sometimes to think that those are the kind of things that are stopping this world from progressing. I mean, I want to save the tortoise as much as anybody else, but really, to put our whole world on hold because of things like that is crazy.
Yeah, well, and the really discouraging part is that we don't have better outcomes. So I was just talking to somebody yesterday about this. We were talking about permitting reform and what permitting reform needs to look like and why it's so important. And I was explaining that these projects take years, sometimes decades. The permitting process they go through costs millions of dollars, and taxpayers are funding all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Taxpayers are funding, you know, the increased cost of the project as it takes longer and longer. They're funding all of the permitting hoops that are being jumped through, all the studies. Then the studies go stale, and you have to do new studies. And when the environmental groups sue, if they win on anything, then taxpayers are also funding the attorney's fees that made it take so long and slowed it down. And maybe if at the end of that process we came out with a better pipeline or a better power line, but we're getting the same product at the end. We're just making it take a lot of time and a lot of money if we ever get there. I shouldn't say we get the same product. If we get a product and it doesn't get stopped, it's not better for this process. And so it's time to wake up and admit that the emperor has no clothes on and address the problem. NEPA was supposed to just be a procedural thing. It was supposed to be a requirement that you look at options instead of just going with the first thing that comes into your head. What it's turned into is an absolute disaster.
Yeah. She's Celeste Malloy, U.S. Congress. Celeste, thank you so much for spending some time with us on this Friday.
Hey, thanks for letting me come on.
We're out of time. Hey, everybody, happy March to you. It is March 1st. We will talk to you on Monday.